Hello, everybody. Welcome back. Why Bitcoin Podcast here today. Fundamentals. Mr. Hey, Fundamentals, how's it going?
Good, good. Great to be here, man. I love the show.
How insane of a Bitcoin are you that you're recording back-to-back podcasts? What's wrong with you?
You know what? Because I am going on high hash rate later, and they record late. Like, I have early bedtime, and so it's like, I got to psych myself up. I had to get my whole family to like entertain me, be ready to keep me up, to get on with those guys. But then, you ping me and you're like, you want to do this? And dude, nothing energizes me more than talking about Bitcoin. So I was like, hell yeah, let's just do this. This is better.
Right on, man. Feels good. Okay. Question number one.
All right.
Did you read the white paper yesterday?
I did not read the white paper yesterday. I wore my white paper t-shirt and I read some parts of it to some people, but I don't know. Like, I have read the white paper, and it is, there are certain insights that I think are pretty great, but I don't know that it's not like a biblical, I don't view it as a biblical document necessarily, but it is obviously, pretty freaking significant.
You don't feel like it's biblical yet. Yeah, dude.
Exactly.
For context, anybody listening, yesterday was White Paper Day, Halloween. So we're recording day after. Yes. I personally do read it every year. I mean, I've been a Bitcoiner for 1, 2, 3 years, and I've read it on Halloween every year. It makes me happy. And I always find something new or like a word I didn't understand. And then through a couple of years of listening to podcasts, you're like, oh, I actually know what this means now. Like, I read where Satoshi explains what the difficulty adjustment is in like simple sentences. I was like, oh shit, this is just like so nonchalantly said here, and it changed the world. I would recommend reading it back every once in a while if you haven't.
Yeah, it is amazing. I mean, I just got done with that. It's a book called, I guess, Satoshi's Journal, and it's just like the collection of all of his Bitcoin Talk posts.
The Book of Satoshi.
I think, is that what it's called? The Book of Satoshi?
Yeah, that's one that's Phil on Champagne's my list. Book. That's right. Yeah, it's just all of the things he's said and did.
Yeah, and I think you were like, you hit it, like the simplicity at which he communicated this stuff. The ego he had to have, right, to think that he could do something so significant. And yet, you look at the way he communicated, and he just communicated like, an autistic engineer who just wants to share and get people to understand his shit.
Yeah, he just wanted his project. I think he knew his project was going to work. And then he just said, here's what it is. Here's how it works. This is why it works. You should use it. I'll roll into this.
Yeah.
And you can go as deep or as shallow as you want here. But your job is an actuary. Am I getting that right?
I'd say that's my profession. My job is a market risk manager.
Okay. Can you just explain what an actuary is? Because I've been wondering that.
So an actuary is like a mathematician who specializes in insurance. Classically, they would help insurance companies price insurance and figure out how the reserves they need to hold. I started working in pensions, and we had to figure out what their reserves would, how much of a reserve do they have to hold to be able to pay off their pensioners. That's like the classical application of an actuary in what's called the life insurance space. There's property casualty actuaries that then price like car insurance and things like that. But basically, okay, You're using probability and like time value finance, time value of money type finance to get a long-term view of a company's cash flows and then figure out what do they need to put away today. Obviously, it all ignores inflation and is based on a lot of flawed assumptions that nobody questions.
Well, okay, that was going to be my where I'd go to, because if you're analyzing insurance, I mean, the obvious thing that could happen here, well, at least obvious to me, is like, if it's life insurance, what if 10,000 people die in a year and you had projected for 1,000 people to die using, you know, simple numbers here. It seems yep. like the math there is so obscure and would just fail on such a small variable. How did you deal with that being your profession? Did you like pull your hair out ever, or do you?
I pull my hair out. I mean, so I guess if you think about what are the typical problems that people will have in this profession, you've probably never heard of such a situation ever occurring, right? Like, you've never heard of a company that like got like bankrunned by deaths, right? Okay. Because they didn't predict enough or they didn't reserve for enough. By and large, companies, they're like pretty well diversified. And I'll say of all of the, if you have listened to my podcast, Rock, Paper, Bitcoin, you'll definitely hear me rail against people who think they can do financial projections, people who think they understand the world in this way. But if there's one thing actuaries actually typically, they do know and know how to model, it's mortality. So I'll give them that. And usually companies have mixes of products that make it, they diversify the mortality risk, meaning like it's just as good of a thing if too many people die as if it is a bad thing. I know it sounds sociopathic.
Okay.
You know what I mean?
There's
something called an annuity that pays people for their entire life, and then they stop getting paid when they die. So if they live longer than expected, then the company can get wrecked that way as well, right? But then if they live a long time, they don't have to pay out life insurance. So you see, there's like that type of diversification.
Okay. So being a Bitcoiner, how do you feel about that diversification and this money going into these things? And then how do you feel in insurance in general? I'll give a little short story here.
Yep.
Before I was a Bitcoiner, my son, he's 5 years old now. He was, I don't know, one or two at the time. And I talked to an RESP person about saving up for his education once he turns 18. And I was talking to this guy.
Sorry, what's RESP? I'm not kidding.
Oh, sorry. Yeah. It's just like a fund you put money into, and then the government gives you a little bit more when your kid turns 18. But it has to be used on schooling.
Oh, right. Got it. So that would be like a 529 in America, something like that.
Sure. So I'm talking to this guy, and then I go through with it because I'm an idiot. I don't know anything about money. It's the first time I've thought about investing, quote unquote investing, I guess I would use as the word, in any way. And then, I was looking at the numbers, and it's like, yeah, your money's going to double in 18 years. And I was like, not knowing anything about money, I'm like, dude, if I put in, you know, say I put in 20 grand, my kid gets 40 grand in 18 years, what the fuck is that going to do? But I was fucked. I didn't have any other choice. Like, I was smart enough to understand that inflation was something. Anyways, since becoming a Bitcoiner, I've made other choices with my money. I'm basically all in on Bitcoin. So I guess my question to you is, one, how do you feel about diversification? Two, are you all in? Three, do you feel like an insurance is somewhat of a scam at this point in your life? Or do you still believe in it, given it's been what your whole life has been about?
Okay, yeah. Let me try to hit these in, I think, the order of the top of the triangle first to the bottom of the triangle.
Sure. Sorry, I'm spitballing a lot of questions.
So first of all, I think almost everything coming out of fiat is a scam. It's at very least perverted and corrupted, and you have to look. So if the podcast that I named it Rock Paper Bitcoin, but it really is named after what I look at as like a way of life. Like when Bitcoin emerged in my life, it called every single thing I knew in my life into question. And now this is the journey of rediscovering everything and understanding it in the presence of Bitcoin, right? And so the insurance industry is a big one for me because that's where I work and that's where I make my living, right? And I've thought a lot about this, and obviously like life insurance intuitively doesn't make sense in the presence of Bitcoin, right? Like you just buy Bitcoin, that's your life insurance, right? I mean, I to me, it doesn't get any more simple than that. You follow me there?
Yeah, I completely agree. Sorry, okay. I had myself muted. But yeah, I completely agree. I mean, life insurance, that was another one I was looking into. And I was just, I mean, just thinking about it, it's like, I'm not going to, okay, one, is this going to pay out, be real? Two, how am I going to, you know, like be sure that it is there, that they're not going to go bankrupt?
I mean, you're going to be paid out in fiat, and who wants that? And you can, and no company will ever, you can't. So I don't think a company will ever sell life insurance in Bitcoin. So
no, that'll never
happen. Buy your own Bitcoin, and that's your insurance, and that's great. So then, but there's this other thing called an annuity. Okay. And you may only hear this in the world ever from me, because I've worked in annuities for 28 years. What is an annuity? Annuity is a stream of payments. So like I might buy an annuity, like say I'm retiring. I know I'm going to stop working at 65, like I'm some dumb American or whatever who's been sold this dream, right? I'm not going to work anymore, right? So I have a pot of money now, and I want to trade it for a stream of income that preferably I will not outlive, right? And that's called an annuity. Just as ANN, like the annual, it just means I get paid every year, right? Mm-hmm. I do believe that if you strip away fiat and you say fiat never happened, right? I think you'll find examples in the world of people selling annuities. You can go back to the Roman army. You can go back earlier than that, actually, but you can see it clearly coming into play in Rome. And I wrote a small paper about this. That I think that an annuity actually is the desire to trade a pot of money today for a stream of money in the future is, I think, a basic desire.
Would you get more money? Like, do I put in $1 million and then for the next 20 years I get 100,000 every year? Or?
If you want some retarded fiat annuity, then yeah, you can structure it so that you pay a lot of fees, but then you could get more, right?
Okay.
But in the world where fiat never existed and these insurance companies never existed, I think people will be making these trades. And I think that in the paper I wrote, I used basically like how you could use Lightning as a structure for cooperation for that type of trade. But in the Bitcoin world, I think what you'll get is less. You'll actually get less because you'll need less in the future. See, everything right now, all the annuities is like you need more in the future, right? But in the world we're moving into, I believe people will have, they'll make a trade for today, you know, today's money for some future money. Mm-hmm. And they'll do it in a structure where they get less every year, or maybe every epoch.
So are you aware of like time locking? It sounds like you're just time locking. I think the main purpose of this is, you know, for one, for passing it on to your kids, or two, if you're just bad with money and if you have a big pot of sats and you've been known to spend it on a bunch of bullshit, you can just time lock yourself.
Yeah, time locking is definitely a way to do that to yourself. Right. Mm-hmm. But I do think also there are people who need money now, and there are people who are willing to trade their money now for something later. And I do think that Bitcoiners they're going to have to grapple a little bit with the idea of outliving their money. And so at some point, I think we're going to have to figure out whether it's mortality pooling, but, I don't know that like maybe we don't, maybe it doesn't matter, but like, so I get, let me just disclaim to your audience, right? I'm one of those guys that's like, I'm a simp for, the vision of a guy like Tomer Sterlite, you know, mm-hmm. who like, you know, where in,
everything is beautiful.
I'm thinking of a film like Bitcoin's Generational Wealth and like
2 year, you know, anniversary today of that film.
Oh my God. Awesome. Right. Like, you know, when you talk about in 50 years, like really what, you know, really just expressing the vision of what it's going to be like. Mm-hmm. I've talked to him about this, and I think in order to get to that high of a place, right. Mm-hmm. I don't know if we get to that high of a place without actually losing the shred, losing the anxiety of outliving our stack. So
losing the anxiety of outliving. Wait,
yeah,
unpack
so
that.
I think we're going to have.
You have anxiety gonna, of. You have of anxiety that you're going to outlive your
you
stack?
Should. Yeah, and I think you should. I think people should have some anxiety about outliving their stack, right?
Meaning like they'll use all their sats.
Yeah,
and then
what
they
if
won't
you live 100 years longer than you think you are?
Okay.
I know that's not a reasonable question, but I'm just that's just to make the example, right?
But it still comes down to spending less than you make, always. I think that's the beauty of Bitcoin is like, it's the most simple thing. With fiat, it's like, spend less than you make and also invest aggressively because it's going to be stolen from you. With Bitcoin, it's like, spend less than you make every week and you're good. So it's just a mentality.
Agreed.
So
we're going to have to figure out then families, we're going to have to figure out how to live, with, you know, when we're unable to work and... You know, we need less over time. Mm-hmm. But I do think that either a person or a family, right, can outlive their stack, right? And I think that's just a question to grapple with. And, not from some sleazy financial analyst that, you know, it's more just, it's a question, right? It's something to grapple with.
I guess I disagree because you can't. Even if your stack, and this is something I thought about before, this was one of my aha moments in my mania of understanding Bitcoin, is like, even if your stack goes down to zero and you're alive, well, then you can go to work and you can make more sats.
I mean, if you're like 110 years old, that's going to be hard to do.
Well, if you're 110 years old, you must have some pretty crazy tech going on, so maybe you're still in good enough shape to produce value for the world. I get... Right? Like,
you know, I don't know. I mean, that's the, one way or the other, right? We either have to keep ourselves adding value for longer, mm-hmm. right? That's definitely one way. But I can see the appeal of just having a couple of sats flowing in over the years and just, you know, keeping mm-hmm. some utilities on and not necessarily. You know, not necessarily worrying about that. I hear you, right? I just, you know, I don't know. I don't know if a lot of people really do think about, you know, your value add. You know, I don't think you have to retire at 65. I think that's stupid. I plan to add value for a very, very long time. I just don't know. I don't know when. I don't know if it's 90, 95, 100. When do I cease to be able to really do that?
When do you change from a producer to a strictly consumer? But then that's just sort of another philosophical question of like, what do you think of yourself as a Bitcoiner if you're strictly consuming? Because I think there's a lot of Bitcoiners that are OGs and have like probably literally thousands of fucking Bitcoins. Yes. And they still are out there producing value because they want to be a productive person, they want to live a fulfilling life. I think that's one of the key aspects of being a Bitcoiner. So this theoretical person you're talking about probably was never a good Bitcoiner to begin with.
When do you think the first real Bitcoiner will turn the age of 90? I can't even think of anyone like Lawrence Lepard, like at some point. So I don't know, like I can't even think of anyone.
Yeah, but Larry likes gold, so he...
You know what I mean, though. Like I. It's so we're so far away anyway. Like we are really far away. Everyone, the majority of people in this space are like yourself, right? Young children, probably in their 30s, mid 30s, early
30s,
something
early
like that. 30s.
Yeah.
Right? You had enough. You've lived a long enough time that you've saved something, right?
Hopefully, yeah.
But you're still sort of millennial age. You know.
Still have a long life ahead of us, hopefully.
And still, yeah. So this is not something that most people that's on anyone's mind, right? So anyway, that's I guess to answer your question, that's what I think of insurance, right? I do think there's that's what I think of insurance, and I'll just for the record, I never used that savings account a bit, and mainly because it made me sick to pay fees to any of these funds.
Yeah. I think, yeah, And it just comes to your mentality as a as an individual and whether you believe in a product or not. I think that's what separates Bitcoiners from, and even to people that are not Bitcoiners yet, but have that Bitcoiner sort of ideology in their life. And they're just like, I don't want to do this shit. You know, like I want to just produce my own value.
I was a white knuckle saver, cash saver, and didn't know about Bitcoin, you know, until like almost 2 years ago.
Well, I'd love to get into that because I think me and you have similar stories in that we became Bitcoiners, pretty hardcore Bitcoiners, relatively quickly, which I think is only going to get easier and easier for people coming into this space, as it were. Tell me about yours. How did you go from nothing Bitcoiner to who you are now? How quick did it happen, and what were some of the aha moments for you?
Yeah, and I do relate to your story too, like just getting sucked into the rabbit hole, like you know,
this changes everything.
So I mean, I'd seen it, obviously. I'd been in finance, I've known people who in and out of my window that were, you know, involved, but I never met anyone who had any integrity with Bitcoin. You know, I never like Mandrix from our town, but I never met anybody like that, you know, like back in the 2010s, right? Most of the people that I'd met were people that I just don't take seriously. So if they came with Bitcoin, I was like, whatever, you know, that's your thing now. So really what my journey here, I'd say I'm a kind of a COVID casualty, in the way of, you know, I was watching a lot of TV for several years, a lot of CNN, really sucked in. It was really kind of miserable, actually. And something wasn't right, obviously, for me in the pandemic. Something very much wasn't right. And then, you know, 2020 was weird, but 2021 to me was the worst year because that was the year of the vax. And that was the year that like really the gaslighting came in like full blown force. And I'll say I take the L on the shot itself. But then at some point in time, I woke up and realized there's no way I'm going to let my kids do this. And once I realized that, the whole world was like my enemy. The whole world was just basically doing everything they could to like ruin our life.
And this is you're not a Bitcoiner yet. It's 2021.
I'm still not a Bitcoiner yet. Okay. Yeah. So I'm fighting the world with, and I don't even have I don't have an ally like Bitcoin yet.
Gotcha.
Right. And one of my, like I'll call, I don't want to call him an influencer, but this is a guy who I've been reading I've been a subscriber to his blog about his ideas on health since like 2012. And his name is Dr. Jack Cruz. I don't know if you've ever heard that name or know who he is.
No, I'll look him up.
But dude's a legend. Like I've been listening again, 2012, 2013. He's been very on the edge of, I consider him brilliant, really. And at some point in time, he started talking about Bitcoin, and I was rolling my eyes. It's like, really? This dude's like shilling Bitcoin now? What the fuck, right? But at some point during this year, 2021, he started making a lot of sense. And he started saying, you know what? You guys are not free, and there are people in Australia right now that need to leave their country. Like they need to flee. And they probably can't, you may find yourself in a situation like that. You will not be able to use regular money. You will not be able to, you just won't even be able to do it. You'll have to fly some charter. You'll need to find a coyote. None of these people will take state money. And it was just making a lot of sense to me. Like I may actually not live a life. I may not have access to the things I want to have in life if I don't have, if I don't have an alternative money, the money that those people demand. That's just that was basically what it came down to. It's like, I better like learn what this is. And then I saw him on Caribou Nick's podcast, right? And
Nobody Caribou?
Yeah, Nobody Caribou.
Okay, gotcha.
And these, like, Nick had an effect on him that I'd never seen in sort of knowing of this guy for like 10 years. Nick had an effect on him. And I didn't know who Nick was, but I'm like, I want to know who Nick is. And so I saw he had this whole School of Coin series. And I'm like, you know what? I'm going to do every one of these things. I'm going to do one a day. And then I'm going to buy some Bitcoin. This was like November now of 2021. And it took me to like January. Like I had to set up a fresh bank account because I didn't want Coinbase to be able to access my bank account or anything like that. You know, so I need to go through all that. And finally, I'd done all the videos and it's January of 22. And I basically did it. And then it was shoot down the rabbit hole from there. I mean, I don't know if that was a great story necessarily. There's a lot of unanswered questions in there. But yeah. I mean, that kind of flows right into just me being involved with Nick's website, Nobody Cares website, right into the trucker rally, right into him, you know, going down his street. And he's putting up videos every day. And, you know, it's just like a remarkable thing. That's the trucker rally was the thing that woke me up to the fact that the media will call anything it wants a white supremacist movement. Yeah. But yeah,
that was fun.
You have to catch them red-handed to see it, I think. And that was the moment I caught them red-handed. Mm-hmm. Because I'm like, this is not. I've been watching Nobody Cares party videos for like these, you know. It's crazy. Everyone's having an amazing time. This is not that. And then that's what woke me up then to like the whole, you know,
the government is lying to
you. Oh, PSYOP. That's what it began, the PSYOP and the whole rabbit hole. I'm like, oh my God, I am, you know, alone in this world. And
so,
you know,
so you, you've definitely said on your show before you were, and correct me if I'm wrong, maybe I misheard, but you said you were more left leaning politically.
I would say that I was very much a centrist, but at the year, I, you know, 2015 through 2020, this combination of the populism I saw in the world and then my own like Trump derangement syndrome drove me left. Like,
oh, you were not a fan of Trump?
No, I was not. I was
okay.
And to the point of derangement, you know, and so I became like everybody else at that point in time. And, you know, you know what I mean? Just was very, saw him in a very low signal way. Myself as a low signal receiver, you know, it's pretty, I'm not proud of it, you know, but I'm, you know, I had to go through it, I guess. And I had to be able to look back and see myself as, it's like, I took the shot. It's like, you know, I took the vax and it's like, yeah, I did a lot of things that just a stupid fucking person would do.
Yeah, I'm just going to, I'll back away from my mic just to make sure nothing transfers through the internet lines here. I'm just fucking with you.
You know what I mean? Like when you realize, like, this is the thing, like, I realize like, oh my God, I'm a stupid person.
Yeah, dude.
How did this happen?
I do know exactly. And you know what? Okay, so this is what's weird because, the Trump thing made a lot of, and this is what I think about in politics in general. Maybe a see what you think is that they put somebody in power, whether it be, you know, Trump or Trudeau in Canada's case here, and the people that don't like them so much that they're forced to just side with the other guy. And so it's either an overcorrection or you're not voting for somebody you like, you're voting because you don't like the other person, which is just an absolute clown show, right? It's like, oh, I don't like this guy, so I guess I'll go for that guy, which I think is happening in Canada right now. If you're following at all, there's this guy named Pierre Polyev. He's somewhat of a Bitcoiner. So what are your thoughts on overcorrection on politics?
It's very low signal, and I hate that I got caught up in it. I will say that it's not that I was left-leaning, but I was what I would call, I think I may be coining this phrase, but I was a woke supremacist.
Okay.
And I was like 20 years into wokeness, and it's yet another thing that I woke up at some point in time and I'm like, oh my God, I looked at basically what society was doing with this. And I'm like, this is fucking stupid. This is like, I am a stupid person again, yet again. Like, this is, I'm not on the right side of this thing here.
Yeah. I think,
you know, so that pulled me left also. That just those being around those people, you know, being around those people. But here's the other thing, what happened in 2021, right? So I'm like, again, 20 years of like study, a student. I mean, you want to talk about the rabbit hole, Bitcoin rabbit hole. I read so many books on racism and like, you know, I was deep, very something that was a passion of mine. And yet, you know, you have these people that are like a threat to justice anywhere, or an injustice anywhere, like it's a threat to justice everywhere. And it's like, yeah, you know, these people are being forced into a medical experiment. Fuck those people. You know, and you realize that the whole thing fell apart. The whole, like for me in my head, I was like, like everyone I've been cultivating relationship with for 20 years is a fucking LARP fraud.
It's so sad. These realizations are so brutal, man. I feel you 100%. One of the wake up moments for me was, what was it? The blacks. I was on Instagram still back then, and there was this black square that was circulating. I just stopped. I was like, what the fuck are you people doing posting a black square? Do you think, I don't know if you remember this or if you've ever been on Instagram. Hopefully not.
I didn't really do Instagram.
It was just a virtue signal to the fucking nth degree, you know? And you ask people like, do you think you're making a difference? Like, what the fuck? All you're doing is pledging your allegiance to some bullshit thing so that people don't think you're a bad person, which a lot of people, you know, you find people say the term sheep so much, right? But it's like, that's what it is. And then anybody that says, hey, maybe don't do that, or maybe this is stupid, or maybe question what the fuck is going on, you look like the asshole. And that's one thing. So how did that affect you when you realized that you were the asshole in all of these people's eyes? And you just have to eat that.
You talk about overcorrection, right? I mean, like that's the whole way, whatever the country, whatever Western society did with racism in 2020 was a classic overcorrection, right? It's like, oh no, everything they do is the best and perfect now. And if you disagree, you're a fucking asshole. So like when you go through something like that for 20 years, and I'm still a guy that sees signal and sees through bullshit, right? So a lot of things, there were a lot of things that I'd accumulated that didn't totally sit right with me, but I was kind of tolerating. And so by the time this all blew up in, you know, 2021, it's not just like the friends, you know, that you realize just, you know, all they care about is whether or not you got your shot and if you're going to get your kids it, and that, you know, are you like, you know, going to say, you know, whatever, say all the right things and all that shit. It's like everybody did, my family, even like, you know, then coworkers, they're all like adopting, they're all becoming moon faced wokes, you know, at work. It's really strange. Right. Mm-hmm. For me. So look, the good news for me is I have like a gift of, I was born with some level of autism that truly doesn't give a shit. Like, I know I'm right. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Even if I'm being stupid and I'm doing stupid things, I know sometimes I will do stupid things, but I believe in myself and my own reads on things. And so if I know I'm right, it's just like, you know, this Dr. Jack Cruz on this talk, he talked about the parable, the Plato's, you know, the whole
Plato's cave,
the parable of the cave. Yeah. And that really resonated with me. I was like, yeah, it's going to be like, I'm going to have to leave the cave and find some lions to hang out with. And I feel like that's what I'm doing right here with you, man.
Absolutely, dude. It's so nice talking to Bitcoiners. I need it every once in a while. I fucking start losing my mind. You just hear a little bit. So it's just that thing. Being a Bitcoiner, we're always trying to figure out like, what is a Bitcoiner really? But I think one of the key aspects is just somebody that fucking questions shit. So do you feel like that's something that you always did in your life? Like, you'd follow the narrative, but you'd still just like double think about it sort of thing?
I was always like, I was never very well liked in general, because I was always a bit of a contrarian. I'll just say I just, you know, I went through a period of my life from like the age of 20 to the age of, you know, 45, where I somehow lost myself a little bit, and I really like wanted acceptance, you know? And then it just took, at some point in time, like a snap of a finger, it was over, you know?
You just don't care about that acceptance anymore. You just want to be.
It was beautiful. And it was like a really beautiful thing to realize, like, oh my God, I'm free.
I just don't care about any of you. Did you, because one of my aha moments was realizing, like, if all of your money is in fiat, or you save in fiat, or you work for fiat, just if you're part of the fiat system, you're quite literally a slave to a corrupt system. And yes. Then when I realized, like, oh, if I'm a Bitcoiner, I'm not a slave anymore. So I don't give a fuck about any of this shit. Do you feel that way? Do you feel like the fiat system is a system of slavery? And do you feel Absolutely. Like your chains are released now? Do you think that's part of what woke?
My fiat is a system of slavery, yes. And I think that anyone who has 100% of their money in fiat is absolutely corrupted in some way by fiat. There's mm-hmm. no way around it. Okay. Now this goes into, I have a lot of I talk a lot about how much disdain I have for the profession of financial advisors and financial planners and people like that. Cause it's like such a fake thing. Like to say, even the ones that recommend Bitcoin are like, oh, you know, like, you know, they want you to think that they actually know how much Bitcoin you should hold. And whereas it's such a personal decision to you. And the way I've been thinking about it recently is the minimum amount of Bitcoin someone should hold is how much is basically how do you get uncorrupted? How much fiat do you have to let go of to uncorrupt yourself?
Mm.
Right? Is it enough to get your head out of your ass, or do you have to really get your arms free? Right? So it's like, is it? You know, there's no optimal allocation of 30% or 40%. It's like, how much Bitcoin do you need, right, to breathe and to feel like a sovereign person? Mm-hmm. And that's a very personal question, right? But it's like related to fiat corruption as much as it's related to what is the possibility of Bitcoin in your life? Like, what does Bitcoin do for you, right? You know, I don't talk a lot about what Bitcoin has done for me, but like it is an ally in my war. You know, I mean, the closest mm-hmm. way to describe it is if you've read Crypto Sovereignty, which I highly, highly recommend.
Yeah, I'm stoked for that one, man. Huge fan of Case. And
like, really, though, like it is my ally. Like I have, God, you know, part of not caring really is because I know that I have Bitcoin in my corner, and you know, the emperor has no clothes, and you see it over and over again, right? No, I'm not impressed by people that I used to be worried about what they think of me. I'm like, geez, these people don't even understand how to, it's like amazing. They tie their shoes in the morning, right? They're like, why would I be scared about somebody who's absolutely corrupt and corrupted by their money? Don't even see it. Like how in the world could that intimidate me? Right. How in the world could a person like that intimidate me? So that's kind of like how Bitcoin has powered my, you know, just my ability to be confident in the world. And I tell people, like, I don't even, if the, you know, I want the, obviously want the economic benefits, right? But it's already, it's already enough. Like, it already has done so much for me, you know.
It's given me
hope in my black pill, you know, really in my worst black pilled moment. It's actually now given me some hope.
That's awesome, man. Yeah, dude, I feel that 100%. Oh shit, I lost my question. Yeah, the black pill thing is fucked. I was there too, man. It's fucking brutal. And I think that's, you know, what's sad is like, yeah, being left or centrist or just following that narrative, it is so. It's like, it seems like it's depressing on purpose, because when I was watching all the leftist fucking media and whatever else, everything is bad. Everything is sad and there's no hope. Nukes are going to come any day, or the fucking climate's going to kill you, or, you know, whatever the fuck else. Oh, meat's going to stop your heart.
That's these people, right? And if you let these people do what they do, And maybe so I partly got influenced because I read Atlas Shrugged last year for the first time, and it's like they are gonna destroy themselves, you know?
Yes.
It's like inevitable.
Yeah, I mean,
just celebrate it.
That's just like the secret or the what's the term for it? The law of attraction or if you think the world is going to end, it is going to end because you're going to see fucking terrible shit everywhere. That's another reason why I love Bitcoiners, because we see such a bright future. It's like, yo, shit's going to be awesome. And if we keep thinking that, it's going to happen, because we're just all going to keep caring and keep trying and keep producing and keep making a better world for the people around us. We're going to try our best to anyways, right? And it's definitely going to be more so than the people that are saying, oh, I'm not going to have kids because the fucking world is going to be underwater in 3 years. You know, it's like
fiat breeds that hopelessness, though. Fiat, right? Because it's like, because it's the misery industry, and it tries to remove your hope, right? Fiat, and that's the trap people are in.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They're corrupted by fiat, and they have no hope.
And if you have no hope, you have fucking nothing. It's just insane how
you have no power. If you have so you have no power to alter your situation, like none. That is like a worst state I can imagine a person being in.
Yeah, man. And especially if you're somebody that like is trying to care, but then you realize you have no power, you're fucked. Like that's where I was for a long time. It's just like, I have nothing I can do, and I hate everything. Then there's, you know, welcome Bitcoin. Fuck, thank God for Bitcoin. This is what I wanted to ask you. Yeah. You became a Bitcoiner and I think we had a back and forth quickly about price on Twitter. So maybe we can get into this a little bit, but you became a Bitcoiner somewhere in the middle of a downtrend, I guess. I honestly don't know when the bear, quote unquote, bear market began. But somewhere around 22, the price started going down. So when you were becoming a Bitcoiner, price was going down. Tell me how that fell. Tell me if it affected you in any way. Tell me, did you just go like, how did you cope with that? Did you just go back and look at previous cycles and just be like, oh, we're just here, so it is what it is, and I'm just going to carry on? Or
I think that I arrived a fully formed person, I think. So I was very fortunate that I arrived already knowing, I was already very confident, had a lot of conviction in it already by the time I got in January 22. So yeah, we were like in the mid 40s, I guess, right back then.
Okay.
So when it started going down, my only instinct was to keep stacking.
Nice.
And then I just kept reading. Like, so like I just didn't, you know, I was like the gravitational black hole of the rabbit hole I was in was, you know, I was reading ferociously.
Nice.
And which I think is a good thing, because that keeps you away from a lot of mischief and potential, right? So like part of, I think, why I never shitcoined, part of it was the timing that I came in. I didn't have time to learn or care about it. And then by the time I might have, they were already blowing up. So great. But so like you're ferociously reading, and it's just like keep stacking all the way down. This is good. You know, that is truly how I approached it.
That's awesome. Going.
The fact of the matter is, I know we had this conversation, we disagreed on price and a little bit. It's not that. It's like I'm too young. I've never been in a bull market. I've never enjoyed that yet. So for me, it is still like I'm still locked into this. This is savings that's not debatable and not confiscatable. And that's like from that perspective, it truly doesn't matter about the price. It matters if you're short, and it matters if we're all going to need a new cell phone at some point in time, right? We're all gonna need to live on this. So it's gonna, like, that probably will matter. But, you know, I just think it matters when you're about to sell it or about to trade it for something. I think that was where I landed.
I think the reason I think the price, so I've gone back and forth on this. I said for a long time on this show, the price doesn't matter, nobody gives a fuck. And then I've kind of backtracked, and I'll own that. But I think why it matters is because, one, it shows the debasement that's actually happening to the fiat currencies, you know. And this is a fucking crazy stat. I don't know if you swear on your show. I kind of gave up not swearing. But in Canada, we had an all-time high. It was 80 grand or whatever. And in the States, it was at that 60 whatever. And now, if the States, if it hits the same all-time high in American dollars, the all-time high in Canadian will be like 10,000 Canadian dollars more, meaning that the Canadian dollar has devalued by so much just in the last 2 to 3 years that we're already seeing a major difference in price in Canadian dollars and American dollars. And this is, you know, extrapolated to, Lebanon or Argentina. It's obvious, right? Like those guys are hitting all-time highs all the time. And so I think that's why the price matters. It's just more so to show the debasement of the currency that you're measuring it against, because that's what people need to understand. The price of the price of Bitcoin is not, well, we're actually in a phase right now where the price of Bitcoin is going up, but for the most part, it's just that everything is going down around it. And we're going to hit a point where fiat currencies don't exist. And then we're just going to see Bitcoin price everything. And we're just going to see prices fall forever. So in that matter, I think that the price matters just to explain to people, like, look at what's happening to your savings, because it's hard to see that in any other aspect. Like even in real estate investors, they'll buy a house for 500 grand and 3 years later it's 800 grand and they think they made $300,000. It's like, no, you have the same fucking house, idiot. It's just that the money has devalued so greatly that to buy that same house, it costs way more paper tokens to buy it. So I think
I could see that. I could definitely see that. My only, my caveat here is that it's, I would see it very clearly if it was a free market without manipulation. And that, you know, I think the price measures like the state's cooperation with Bitcoin. And, you know, there's a scenario where there's zero cooperation. I think the price would go to zero in that scenario. And it wouldn't necessarily, we would need some other way to see the debasement. Right. If the state like just says, fuck this now, we are not, we are cooperating zero with this thing. Right. They went all out. And yeah, you know, I doubt that'll happen, but certainly could happen, right? I view the price as a measure of the man's cooperation with us.
Yeah, I think you know, when it comes to Bitcoin, the only thing that quote unquote they can fuck with is the price. So yeah. in that sense, I'm like, yeah, the price doesn't matter. Even, you know, we see all these stories come out, oh, FTX was selling paper Bitcoin or buying, you know, all this shit. It's like, this shouldn't be a surprise. The only thing they can fuck with is the price, but they can only do that for so long, and it still gradually goes up because the paper continues to get printed. So
I agree with that. Yeah, man.
I don't know. I'm kind of contradicting myself. It's like the price doesn't matter, but the price matters a lot.
Prices in general are supposed to matter. We live in a world that's so perverted and corrupted, right? That we have no price signal, right? And there's almost no free markets where the price does matter, right? And that we need Bitcoin to fix that, to fix all prices, and to make the price matter again.
Yeah, man. I think the price only matters when you go to buy something and you want to trade it for another good or service, which, I mean, it matters when you're buying too, because every time I look at the price, I'm like, holy shit, sats are so cheap. This is awesome. And I think I'm going to feel that way probably forever because of how worthless I think fiat currency is. Like, I'll look at it, I'm already in my head, I'm like ready to buy a million sats for $1,000, a million sats for $10,000, you know, and then it gets to the point where you can only buy 1,000 sats for $1,000. That's going to happen. And this is just something people have to get mentally prepared for. It's still cheap because the paper that you're trading for your sats is worthless.
The fact that we can still make this trade.
I know, isn't it so absurd? It's so absurd.
Like no generation is going to understand what we had. No one will ever understand this.
And it's questionable. Okay, yeah, dude, it's fucking insane. It's so funny that Bitcoiners get that. We're just like, this is just an absolute bonkers time to be living through. So here's a little question for you then.
Yeah.
Do you think, well, how do I phrase this? The simplest way to phrase this question is, do you believe in hyper-Bitcoinization? The backup question to that is, do you think that the majority or the entirety of humanity has the ability or the mental capacity to understand and then transfer into a world where they're living on Bitcoin? The question, it comes up because I watched that generational wealth video. I've watched it probably a couple times. And I love Tomer's idea of the future. But I go back and forth on this idea of humans and whether or not some of them are even have a brain enough to switch over to a money that works, or are humans just, are some humans perpetually tied to the idea that they need to be a slave to somebody else, that they need to work for somebody else, that they cannot be sovereign, or that they don't want to be sovereign.
Yeah. So I don't know if I believe, like, the classic people's view of hyper-Bitcoinization. I don't know. I do believe in Tomer's vision, mostly because I choose to, but I can, you know what I mean? Because mm-hmm. of who it makes me to be able to live into that vision. But I don't think we need everybody to I really don't think we need everybody. I think the way it'll work is Bitcoin comes first, then the time preference lowers, and the time preference of society will lower eventually to a critical point. And once I was just reading this quote from Hoppe, you know, that when the time preference of society reaches some critical point, you actually begin to accumulate capital. You know, so I just view it like that. I don't know if we'll see it in our lifetime. Like that thing that I was most moved by in the thing I talked to Tomer about, it was like, my God, if it really happened in 60 years, that would be some shit. That would be incredible, right? I mean, I do, obviously, I see this vision. I share this vision. I'm inspired by it. And I think that it's possible. But I think Bitcoin comes first. And then we adapt. Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm. Bitcoin has to fix everything first, you know.
People have to see that Bitcoin fixes everything.
Like,
yeah.
Like it'll I think all these things will happen, even if people don't willingly come on board or whatever, right? I think you only need the big the majority of the people who are super committed to do it for themselves. Right.
Yeah, I think you just need, you know, a small orange market. We can make a little miniature hyper-Bitcoinization. That's what I say. It's like, even if, so this is another sort of price idea, is that even if the quote-unquote price on exchanges goes to zero, I personally am still going to want to work with or be around or hang out with people that are interested in living on a hard money standard, i.e. Bitcoin, because they just understand that it's a better money. But like, yeah, in what world does the price go to zero? You still want it, like, I still don't want to trade fiat tokens around.
Yeah, no, you would just have to look at the price of eggs and sats to see what's up. I mean, it's like, it's almost like, who cares? So it's a repeated theme in crypto sovereignty. This is a spoiler alert, but I mean, this is a good thing for people. And it's some Latin phrase, but it means, does authority provide trust, or, you know, is truth derived from authority, or is authority derived from truth? And there's going to be a lot of people who, you know, just won't give a shit what the authorities say the price is, right? We will build our life without them, right? We will know from what we're paying for power, right? Probably. And some, whatever that connection is, and what it costs us to, you know, run our ranches, provide medical service, all the things that people do, eventually they will be priced in sats, whether or not there's any cooperation from any authority.
Yeah, right? just depending on the individual, if you want to sell your shit for sats, but that
and there's going to be enough of that for Bitcoiners. I believe there'll be enough of that for Bitcoiners to at least, you know, be sovereign and live good lives.
I agree. Have you bought anything with Bitcoin yet?
Yeah. I'll say trinket type stuff, you know, on scarcity or whatever, plebeian market. Pretty much everything from Saifedean's website, I've paid for it in Bitcoin, like all the books and seminars. So usually when the option's there, I take it.
Hell yeah. And how did that make you feel?
I don't know. It hasn't really hit me yet. You know when it hits me, so I was in Miami for the Bitcoin conference, and being able to pay people for things with Lightning right then and there, I'll say that was the light bulb for me, where it was really satisfying to just, you know, pay somebody. It was like the only equivalent you get in fiat is when you get a message that says you've been approved, which is really lame, you know, like actually being able to transact with somebody peer to peer in real meat space. That felt pretty great.
Right on. Yeah man. Just being, I can only imagine it's what, like, I just think about gold bugs for the last 50 or 100 years thinking, you know, they're probably so stoked every time that they can make a transaction with gold, which would be so rare. But to understand, it's like, yeah, fuck the system. I'm not using your fiat. I'm going to use my little gold fucking nuggets. And for me, it just feels great to use Bitcoin to either get paid or pay for something, because you just know that you're outside of that system. You're not taking part in all the bullshit that comes along with the creation of a fiat currency.
For anyone alive today, gold was never gold. Gold was never that thing, because it's been co-opted long before we were born.
I agree. I know. It got destroyed. Oh, shit. Okay, what do we got left? We got 4 minutes. How do you feel about the ETF thing? What are your real thoughts?
Okay. For Bitcoiners or for
just in general, how do you feel about a Bitcoin ETF? Do you care?
Actually, I do.
Oh, no. Okay.
I do, but not for Bitcoiners.
Okay.
But I will not be able to do this in 4 minutes, but we could do this again. I've talked about this extensively on Rock, Paper, Bitcoin.
Yeah.
And I was thinking of creating a side podcast called Grok Paper Bitcoin.
Hell yeah.
Because that's what grokking paper Bitcoin is, essentially what this – it's the ETF. I have to say, look, it's significant. I'm saying it's significant because of what it means. Let me try to do this in a couple of minutes. BlackRock, most people are looking at BlackRock like an investment manager, and they want Bitcoin because they think what we think, and this number go up and they want to own the world. And that's only partially true. It is partially true, but it's not enough. I have a strong view that that's not their motivation. I have a strong view that their motivation is they believe bonds are fucked. They want to stop being the biggest bondholder in the world. I think they have throw up in their mouth every time they have to buy another bond. It's impossible to manage for their clients because there's no hedge. And they would rather manage a system of Bitcoin exposure with this ETF, which after the FASB rules go in, will be the perfect hedge for Bitcoin. They'd rather manage that system than the system of bonds. And by the way, it was like the last episode. I want to say it's number 23. Called Satoshi Saturday, which we did on Satoshi Saturday. Mm-hmm. But I got very deep into what the hell I'm talking about right now.
Yeah, I shouldn't have asked you to do it in a couple minutes.
I don't think it's coming across very clearly.
That's fine. You know what, dude? We'll make this a double header. Maybe I'll get you back on, and we can do a back to back episode of Fundamentals if you.
Yeah, that was definitely not a 3 minutes left question.
That's fair.
I've had like five complete episodes, like 5 hours of complete episodes.
I know, and I want to.
Ted and I go through this. Yeah.
Yeah, I want to get deeper into it with you because
I mean it is a shitcoin, but I think it's the only shitcoin that's actually gonna. Let me get to the bottom line, though. If it will do is it will defund the fiat Ponzi. right?
Yeah, I think it's just more paper Bitcoin, man. I think whoever
I could do without it, I could personally do without it, right? But I don't get, like, you and I don't get to say, like, what BlackRock, how BlackRock solves their problems. And they see Bitcoin as a solution to their problems. They're going to come and solve their problems with Bitcoin, and we do have to deal with it. You know what? It's unfortunate, though, the retirees, the people who are going to end up with Bitcoin ETFs in their pensions, it's probably better for them than treasuries, but they don't get to choose because they're fucking sheep who don't care what their money is, and that's just the way it is for them. They're always going to be beholden to whatever BlackRock's mood is and what they want, right? We don't have to be. We get to hold Bitcoin, and that's just that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think it's just going to be a redistribution of wealth of people that think ETFs are a good investment to the people that are buying the Bitcoin. And we're gonna watch that explode too. It'll be a good fun show. Oh no, the BlackRock ETF, all the Bitcoin that backed it somehow disappeared.
They're definitely gonna be lost coins. Definitely be lost coins, and BlackRock will FUD the shit out of like owning real Bitcoin.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And Fink can get away with his, he'll try and catch up to Saylor and just, you know, ego boost is probably what's going to happen there.
He's going to get wrecked.
He's either going to get wrecked or he'll be smart enough to take all the people's money, buy the Bitcoin, sell them the fucking ETF, and then say, see you suckers later.
He'll be smarter than Barry Silbert is.
Yeah, exactly. Fuck that guy too. Jeez.
Yeah.
Okay, man. We made it work. Shill your show, tell people where to find you, and then I'll get you back on sooner.
Yeah, so Rock Paper Bitcoin is our podcast, Business Cat, myself. It's great combo, and we just explore what the fuck do we do now that Bitcoin exists.
Hell yeah. And where are you on Twitter, and do you do the
whatever. You just find me on Twitter or whatever, you know.
Okay, yeah. It's all good. I'll have the link in the show notes like a good podcast producer does. All right, man. Thank you so much for coming on. Listeners,
dude,
appreciate
you. Thanks for having me, dude. Great talking to you, dude. Love your show. Love the shit.
Absolutely, man.
Look forward to doing it again.
We'll do it again. We'll get deeper. It's nice to have that little surface scratch with a Bitcoiner. You know, I'm a big fan of Dan too. He's been on, I think he's been on 3 times now. So we get into some deep shit sometimes. It's a lot of fun.
Nice. All right.
Okay, what else do I have to say? If you're listening, share it with a friend. That's the best way to support. We appreciate you. We'll see you next week. And buy as much Bitcoin as you can before the end of the world.